Tarasisi Maharaj. His divine grace is confounded to all the Asi Bhaktivinanta Swami Sri Prabhupada ki. Jai Om Vishnu Paramahamsa Prakatad Tarasisi Maharaj. Divine grace Sila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Dako Maharaj ki. Sri Rama Chacha Haridasa Korki Dream Say Hosri Krishna Chaitanya Babunita Nanda Sisadvaita Gurhar Sivasadi Go Bhakta Vindaki Sisi Radha Krishna Gopi Gopina Saima Kunda Radha Kunda Gibri Govardhanaki Vindavindamki Matura Damki Naburi Damki Jamuna Maiki Ganga Mai ki, Jalasi Devi ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Samaveda Bhakti Vindi ki. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Aganati Miranyasya Yana jana shilakshaya shakshu militam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha si chaitanya namo vistam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam trati sapadanti kam nama om vishnu padaya krishna pastaya bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Nitsini Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivvisessa Sunyavari Paskacha Dezatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Zadeta Gararha Sivasadi Kau Bhaktavindam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Sri Prabhupada ki. So I was reading this morning a few passages, the naming ceremony from this Srila Prabhupada Shikshamrita. And I'd like to just finish, when I finish, we finish that reading, but to look at some other letters that Srila Prabhupada sent. Just some things about our farming and simple living. Self-sufficiency. So as I read these, they're short passages. If you have any questions as we read each one, after each one, then you can raise your hand or some statement or some remark you'd like to make. But I thought it was quite interesting because the other day when I was in Australia, I had a chance to visit several of the temples, and we mainly were at the farm. Several farms, but the biggest farm outside of Brisbane. And it's very, very festive because they have once a year the Rath Yatras along with a lot of workshops. So several of the spiritual masters were there, and sannyasis, Japataka Maharaj and Ramai Swami, Devamrita Swami, the Jumana Swami, Palanananda Swami, several, myself, a few others. They were giving workshops, seminars every day. A lot of nice festive activities. And three Rath Yatras, two in different places, and then another one was in, two at the outside of the farm, and one in Sydney. But at one point I was talking to Ramai Swami, as I was touring certain aspects of the farm that I hadn't been to in two or 3 years. And so in one section, they had a couple of warehouses where they were storing now some different kind of antique things. And it was, at some point it had been done quite professional. There were signs and people would come and tour. It was like a museum. And later we were talking, because their farm project had many, many devotees. As a matter of fact, there were practically thousands of devotees in Australia during the heyday. And on the farm there were hundreds. And so he made an interesting remark, and he was saying, so the failure of our farm was after we got the land, they got land at a very cheap price, and they have lotus ponds, 3 or 4 lotus ponds. It's very, because the weather there is quite nice. Even last week, a week and a half ago when I was there, it was about 90 degrees, 85, 90 degrees. So they can grow all year round, can farm all year round. They say one of the devotee who takes care of the cows, the goody, it's so interesting because he wakes the deities every morning. He does the Mangalarti himself every morning. They have 3 altars. And he takes care of all of the cows and oxen. Does a major garden for the farm. And then any family that wants to have an organic garden, he helps to get it started. And then they, you know, maintain it, of course, you know, themselves. And he rides a horse, you know, around the property, you know, singing, chanting. It's quite blissful. Says the devotees in Alachua, I think, have gotten a horse. As they're focusing so much now on at least certain aspects of the community, they're focusing a lot on simplifying their lives because they're like totally convinced that Y2K and economic other problems are just right around the corner. So they meet on a regular basis, discussing about preparedness and self-sufficiency. And so one devotee has been designated as a messenger carrier, or as one of the leading kshatriyas. And so Amarish has gotten him a horse, so he can ride around and inform the devotees and check on things if need be. And so, as I was admiring certain things about the farm, because last year when I was there, it was somewhat of a disaster. A handful of devotees, and things are, of course, falling apart. But the Brisbane Temple, which is about an hour, and I guess an hour and 45 minutes or 2 hours away, has now taking charge of the project. And so it seems to be a nice marriage in several places where some city project has kind of combined with the farm project. And they both sort of feed off each other. City project makes devotees raise funds and helps facilitate the farm. And then the farm devotees have chance to get more association from those devotees who are coming from the cities, and the devotees in the cities get a chance to have extended breaks from the passion of the city by being on the farm. So the devotee who's basically managing Brisbane Temple has become manager of the farm, so he spends about 4 or 5 days a week at the farm and 2 or 3 days at the, about 2 days normally, at the temple in Brisbane. But I was just looking because in the heyday it was such a grand project. Similar to here, I was just reflecting some time back that at one point there was, you know, over $100,000 being collected a week in Gitanagri. That's how much money and how much input was going on at a certain time. Of course, some of you who were here or know of it, there's many devotees. So he was making a comment. He said, our downfall was when we tried to make the farm a tourist attraction. And we were talking and walking, and I was asking him, explain more. And so then he was mentioning just how this, you know, this museum, they were arranging so many things for people coming. And at one point, a lot of people were coming, you know, to visit. But so much of the, of course, income was based on a artificial economy. Devotees were doing also paintings and things like that, you know, subsidizing. A lot of money was coming, a lot of facilities, a lot of things were happening, a lot of things were being spent. A lot of money came, a lot of money was spent. Like some of you see in your jobs, you know, you start making a little bit more money, but you start spending more. So for many people, if they're not able to keep their life simple, the more they make, the more they spend. Happens like that. So he was describing how what had happened, because he was one of the early devotees helping to raise the money for the project now. For Mai Swami, he's sannyas and GBC of the project of Australia. And so he was discussing how at one point all the leaders in Australia went to New Vrindavan to try to study the tourist attraction of what was going on in the New Vrindavan project. Because at one point New Vrindavan was built up with so much guest facilities and so much ways to try to draw tourists. So then they tried to fashion themselves after that. A lot of big build up. A lot of people came for a while. A lot of money came in. And then after a while, based on the artificial economy, then things just start snowballing, tumbling down, falling apart, fragmenting. And of course devotees start scattering, and majority of devotees who were sort of helping to build the project are now on what they call the dole, or on welfare. Of course, welfare is quite handsome in Australia. It's rather easy to get on. You get actual money. I think now here in America you get stamps and things, and maybe a little money, but mostly food stamps. There they get money, and it's easy to get on, and you know, everybody's on welfare very easily. As a matter of fact, we were saying that one day it's going to be, the government's going to be maybe heavy, because when they see to what degree we preach a philosophy, anti-materialism, anti-bureaucracy in terms of karma yuga bureaucracy, anti-kali in general, but then in some cases we're fully dependent on other people's money who we're attacking, their tax money, as we take it from welfare. So sometimes some governments and civic organizations are going to look at that and think, what are you people talking about? Are you dancing in the streets? We're working in offices, we're making the money, and you're getting our money, our tax money. So it's a huge amount. Practically the majority of devotees are, you know, on the dole. So there's some things that turn over some, you know, quick results, but do not have a sense of longevity. And as I was thinking about that then, I was reading this today, and it was very bold about what Prabhupada's idea and design was for New Vrindavan and other farm communities. And we see that from the onset, he didn't really want it to be a commercial enterprise. Even the farming and things, he was not so interested in commercialization. What to say of many trying to accommodate people based on such, or an economy that was based on from outside. But of course, if we don't have an alternative, you know, what can we do? But so much was fixed in the idea of, yes, as Westerners, especially certain basic necessities that you need, but simplify it. Just as if we analyze our own devotion, that when we can't simplify things, there's a problem. Doesn't matter how complex your life is, how much detail you have to deal with, that's there. But if somehow you can't, at the end of the day, simplify it, then Maya will come in. Many problems may be there, many issues, many things you have to deal with, At the end of the day, you can't simplify it, then Krishna won't be so much in your consciousness, because there'll be just so many serious, you know, distractions that will interfere with your ability to chant your rounds, to read, to focus on higher goals. So although we have so many things, so many details, so many issues, just based on survival, we have to address. But if we can't bring it back to simplicity, then it's a sign of Maya. It's already settled in different ways. Whether we're trying to see how to build something, whether we're trying to see how to pay the rent, pay the mortgage, pay the telephone bill, pay the insurance, pay for medical this or that, or whatever, clothes, food, it doesn't matter what it is. But if at the end of the day, somehow you can't just simplify it, then not only is your Krishna consciousness going out the door, but also your health. Because as you get so stressed out and having to be so intensely absorbed in such things, then there'll be a problem. And we're not suggesting being in denial, because we have to maintain body and soul together. But when it cannot be simplified, then the material things themselves become the priority and become the primary things rather than secondary. So based on that, the idea of self-realization or conscious expansion, it becomes minimized. As you begin to minimize it, after a while, it's less and less. And we then begin to focus more just on certain basic externals. And we lose or we cheat ourselves from the great royal things that we are having a chance to participate in and to become. So I was appreciating more and more why Prabhupada kept focusing on simple living. You see that it, not that he wants us to be in poverty, or that he wants devotees not to have things. Because real simplicity and renunciation really doesn't have much to do with externals fully anyway. They have an effect. It's like we know the dress does not make the man, but the dress does influence consciousness. And in majority of cases, the more distracting material things we have, the less we're going to be at peace, and less we're going to be able to enthusiastically engage in our spiritual commitments. So to that extent, simplicity is healthy. We see Pundarik Aksha, how Pundarik, he was very opulent, very wealthy, and very prestigious materialistic position. But his conscience was fixed and simple. And because of that, we see his example and many other great maharajas, kings, great personalities who were pure devotees or advanced souls, that the environment did not bother them. But that's quite rare in most cases. In most cases, people are very much influenced by opulence or by so many material things that they have to think about, deal with. And we just see that, you know, when you get a lot of debtors on your back, you're not so sure where you're going to get the money for the next meal or the next month or this or that, then consciousness gets affected. So basically we want food, shelter, and all these things so we don't have to worry about it. If we have such, we don't have to worry about it, and we don't have to distract so much of our healthy energy that could go into inner development and external expansion and preaching, that energy can remain in such focus. So Srila Prabhupada was stressing like that with the idea of not being a slave of modernity, of science and technology, not being a slave of bureaucratic elitist materialistic arrangements, because it's basically controlled by demonic influence. And as one is bought or controlled by such, then one becomes the a puppet or the slave of such, consciously as well as unconsciously. So there's a certain beauty and freedom, and there's a certain pain and anxiety and gloom in being so much under control, or having so many variables that's outside of one's natural control and experience. And we find that just by somebody being compelled to be incarcerated in a certain environment. It affects the mind in many ways. Even little children, you demand that they stay in the house, you put them on what you call a timeout, I guess it works. Put them on timeout, they go freaky, you know. You restrict them in some ways, and they get more anxious. But sometimes they restrict themselves voluntarily. It's not such an issue. It's like the last 5-6 days, I stayed in one room, 24 hours, and it was not a problem. Because I voluntarily did it, and I was absorbed in so much work from early morning to 1, 2 o'clock every night. But it was voluntary, and so there was no disturbance. Now, probably if somebody told me, look, Swamiji, for 7 days, you stay in this room and don't come out, and et cetera, I would probably feel tense. I'd be counting the hours, counting the days, and angry at whoever was forcing me to stay in the room, thinking how I'm going to deal with them when I get out of the room. But on one's own voluntary consent, it's different. So Prabhupada obviously did not want us to have to be artificially under unhealthy control and influence. And really the only way to do that is to do it in a sense of community where people complement each other, to do it in an environment that is more natural or sattvic, an environment that can provide such if it is activated sufficiently. Certain environments, it is just practically almost impossible to live a simple life because the environment is just not designed for that. The passion of the cities is just not designed for a simple living lifestyle. But it is so mechanized and so systematized and so centralized that people just pushed into categories into situations. So I want to just read a few of these. You can comment as you like, okay, as questions. Some letters where Prabhupada is just stressing what he expects from farm, what he expects from simple life, and what his idea was of devotees, disciples, living outside of the cities, what kind of goals should be there, what the mindset should be. So this first letter is to Kirtananda Swami, January 12, 1968. And I was getting ideas because later when I come back, I'll be spending extensive time in New Vrindavan. We're going to try to get a lot more focus on things that's happening there. It's one of my GBC areas. And I was just realizing how Prabhupada already had given a plan of what he expected. Since New Vrindavan was one of the first of the rural communities to establish itself, and now he wanted other communities to follow suit. Or the things that he was very, very happy about concerning the Gita Nagari project when he was physically on the planet, and how he would speak about those things as he moved about in various circles. So we keep that in mind, that simple living and high thinking is the natural organic step to spirituality. Just like being in the mode of goodness is the natural step to go to transcendence. It's not so very easy, almost impossible, for someone who's heavy in the mode of ignorance or passion to really embrace transcendence. Because just by the mood of ignorance and passion, there's so many habits and things that a person would be associated with that will interfere with their ability to be a Pakka devotee. You see the qualities of a sadhu, Karunika, the Tikshava, Sante, our devotee is merciful and kind and tolerant and not just captured by ordinary things. So one who's captured by the mode of ignorance and passion, that's like a disqualification in one sense, but transcendence. Even to the point within our own devotees, often devotees fall or have trouble because as we're trying to be transcendental, we're still carrying so much garbage that's connected with heavy modes of ignorance and passion. And if that's not, if we're not moving away from that or raising our consciousness more to the mode of goodness and then to transcendence, then these things will be there or they will be repressed and then they will come out at different times. So sometimes Prabhupada would explain how Vaishnava, you know, is a perfect gentleman. It's not that we are overly concerned about mundane ethics and morality and, you know, philanthropy and those things. But though that platform makes transcendence much more accessible. And you see that just from experimentation when you're preaching to someone. And often you will see when the person is very receptive, you start asking and inquiring into their life, you see it's a pious person. Sometimes they're already vegetarian. They've been, you know, years and years trying to seek, you know, a God connection. They're meditators. They're chanters. They have some type of, they're involved in chastity or something. You see that those qualities are qualities that establish a strong foundation for one to be able to understand the devotional principles, devotional life, and to benefit from it. The opposite is you're speaking to someone and they have no interest at all. As you look into their life, you see they are adulterers, fornicators, and take intoxications and other types of, all types of intoxications, that they are full of so many mode of ignorance patterns. And you realize, oh, no wonder they came here. Or try to preach to somebody who's intoxicated. And you see that just because of the modes that are covering them, how difficult it is to be able to preach to that person because the person is intoxicated. And so that is interfering with their ability to hear something that's for the soul, because the body and the mind is so wrapped in the lower modes. So similarly, for our ability to accept the higher, when we're not simplifying our lives, becomes difficult. Doesn't matter what's going on, many things may be happening, but at the end of the day, we must simplify it. The day we can't do that, there'll be difficulty for the intrusion. And for the degree that in our personality and our socialization, that we have so many characteristics that are motive ignorance or motive passion, then it's also going to be hard for us to live properly, you know, as a sadhu of such. Just like some medications, the prescription says, take it on an empty stomach so that the medication will penetrate through the system faster. And where there is food taken, then it will not have the same potency. There's some medications that suggest you take it in the morning, you take it in the evening. And as you take it according to the prescribed situation, you get the maximum effect from it. So all these things we do in devotional service, they're very potent and they give effect. But they give effect to the degree that we take them based on how it is prescribed. So we take the different things or do different things and our faith is weak. We don't get the same result. We do different things. We don't have the knowledge. Bhagavad Gita explains that in Bhagavatam, a devotional thing that's done in knowledge, one gets more effect from that. Although the same thing is there, but if it's done in knowledge and understanding, the effect, the results are more powerful. If it's done without knowledge, then some effect is there. If it's done accidentally, some effect is there, but it's not quite the same. Or we do something, and we're doing it with a lack of faith, get some results, but it's not necessary. Other devotional activity, and we're doing it, and we are committing offenses in the process, some result is there, but not the same. Or we're doing the very same thing, we have none of those problems, but we have so many weeds that's underlined in our consciousness, result will still not be the same. Like you're planning something, and so as you're planning, the quality of the soil is going to have an effect on the produce, as well as the watering and the gardening. So what's underlined in our consciousness is the quality of the soil that we're internalizing, that we brought into from previous lives. So we're talking about the children. So they're coming in with something now because they're coming into devotional families. So now that the soil is rich, now the thing is what we plant and then how we water it. So you know, some places, some environments, you have good plants, you have good seeds, but the crop is not going to grow the same because of the nature of the soil. And then once that is there, then there's so many other variables that have to go together also. And so we have to weed it, have to keep the animals away, and we have to water it and so many other things. So with the Bhakti Lata Bij, the devotional creeper, all those things are also there. Sukriti, Gyana Sukriti, that one is bringing in from previous life. That's why for some devotees, some things are quite easy, or most or many things are rather easy for them. Or some people are so much prone to fall down. Some people never fall down. Some cases never fall down because they've done so much already. They've done so much falling down in previous lifetimes, and they've gotten burnt from it. They've gotten so much effect from it. And so in their dormant consciousness, there's no attraction to it, or there is extreme fear, and so they do not fall prey. It's like Musibat Maharaj. So as he had failed previously, then in this life, he had such a focus and such external and internal position that he's not going to fall prey to the same thing. So the dynamics at any given time, so many souls associating, and the environments are of different nature, and even the environment is the same nature, so much internal differences is going on. So Srila Prabhupada, requesting simplicity, knowing that that would help whatever the background was, the soil, whatever the present yata adhikara or adhikara, whatever abilities and strength that the particular person is endowed with, that simplicity will accelerate or amplify the devotion. So the rural community, of course, is expert place to be reminded about simplicity and to try to function based on such. So we read a few passages as we develop this theme a little more. But we should all remind ourselves in our services, in our ashram, and the way that we are trying to pursue some economic, some financial reciprocations, whether it's doing our own work or we're working for some employer or whatever, we should constantly simplify, remind ourselves who we are, what we're really trying to do, what is ultimately important. And we can do that as an ongoing exercise from time to time, or even do it as a daily meditation as we sort of posit, you know, our existence and remind ourselves what our goals are and take sufficient investigation inventory, see how we're working toward our internal mission, internal goals and external mission also. So that farm that we're looking at in Australia, when the devotee mentioned that, he said, so the problem was that we were going, developing very strong, a lot of money, a lot of facilities, buying a lot of equipment, so many different things. People were coming as tourists. But he said the main focus was somehow about tourism rather than adhering to Prabhupada's original idea of what he wanted from the farms. And similar, there was just as there was a time when making up $100,000 a week here, the times when Dubandavan was making two or three times that amount. But then, because of what the nucleus was, then you get certain kind of reciprocation, based on the nucleus. And so things became, of course, very, very problematic. So when we can keep the mission, or the vision, let's say, forefront, and that's Prabhupada's vision, as we keep that forefront, and we do what is necessary based on holding on to that vision. It's not that we are to be blind or sort of monotonous or like robotic, because mission is there, but there's so much variegatedness to be explored based on holding to that particular vision given by the founder Acharya. And then last is that when we hold on to such, there's automatic blessings. When the great Nityasiddha devotees, Krishna's special servants, when they request something, when they have an idea of how to offer something to Krishna in a certain way, then any souls who somehow become a part of that, they get blessed. Even somehow if they weren't able to make it happen fully, just by the fact that they have accepted that as their life and soul and take the shelter, then there will be a tremendous amount of success and blessings that accompany that. That is natural mercy of Krishna and his devotees. Krishna does not ever demand anything more than what can in fact be accomplished. He does not request that which is impossible. He does not impose on us that which is unnecessary, unhealthy. So what we constantly find in the Shastra has been given to us for our own well-being and acceleration and ultimate freedom to enter back into the spiritual kingdom. So the first letter here is written to Kirtananda, 1968, January the 12th. And in this letter, Prabhupada mentions some special things about those who live on a farm, pretty much what ashram they are more prone to be in for functioning in a farm environment. There are certain practicalities that can really come to our mind why this is such. Quote, another important scheme is to start a nice press next spring. So these duties are there in New Vrindavan, and we shall have to live there self-independently. Papa uses this term a lot, self-sufficiency, self-independently, simply by raising cows, grains, fruit, and flowers. I have already explained these things to Hayagriva, and he is now married and a responsible grihastha. You are, of course, sannyas. Your duties will be more to preach and supervise the other activities. But do everything jointly. Many grihasthas and brahmacharis will join you for full cooperation. Some of them have already prepared to go there immediately, and perhaps you'll receive some letters about this. So everything appears very bright in the future. We have to deal with these things sagaciously, and success will surely be there. The immediate necessity is to construct some simple cottages for living purposes, and then everything will gradually come about, one after another. I hope that you are already in touch with Hayagriva, and he must have spoken to you about these ideas. Next letter, Prabhupada says, this is a long letter, but I'll just read one or two sections, one point from it, to also the Hayagriva in June 1968. They have been advised to turn San Francisco gradually into New Jagannath Puri. I have advised Kirtananda and yourself to convert West Virginia into New Vrindavan. I understand the spot is very beautiful, and the hills may be renamed New Govardhan. As there are lakes, they can be named Shyamakund and Radhakund. Vrindavan is not required to be modernized, because Krishna's Vrindavan is transcendental village. They completely depend on nature's beauty and nature's protection. It's like, in the summertime, it's so beautiful. You see all the greenery, peacocks moving around, as long as you don't think about how much they mess the area up when they have to eliminate. But other than that, they're very beautiful. Cows are so beautiful. So, but now it's wintertime, If you just forget about the ice, sliding on it and having trouble with the car, you look and see how beautiful it is. At the trees, you know? It's so beautiful, you know? The way the ice is on the trees, is, you know, the branches are just sparkling. So even though it's so cold and snow and etc., because we're in the rural area, it is something still beautiful. You see how nature is interacting. The community in which Krishna preferred to belong was a Vaishya community, because Nanda Maharaj happened to be a Vaishya. It is understood that he had 900,000 cows. A lot of cows. And Krishna and Balaram used to take charge of them, along with many cowherd boyfriends. And every day in the morning, he used to go out with his friends and cows in the pasturing ground. So if you seriously want to convert this new spot as New Vrindavan, I shall advise you not to make it very much modernized. So Prabhupada was very emphatic. He said, so if you seriously want to make this successful, you seriously want to experience the beauty, the simplicity of Vrindavan, and the sanctity of consciousness, devotional consciousness. And he was explaining. Now, at some other times he mentioned that, you know, facility can be the electricity, so many things. He said, as Westerners, you'll need these things. But he constantly emphasized, but in spite of that, simplify it. Still simplify it. I shall always advise you not to make it very much modernized. Prabhupada says, I shall always, very emphatic. But as you are American boys, you must make it just suitable to your minimal needs. Not to make it too much luxurious, as Europeans and Americans are generally accustomed. Better to live there without modern amenities, but to live a natural, healthy life for executing Krishna consciousness. So we turn those places like New Vrindavan and the farm in Australia and a few other places, we turn them into tourist attractions. Then the mentality became so much commercialization more than sustainability, and in many cases more than internal growth and development. And what happens is that you get temporary results, or you get sometimes diminishing returns. You put a lot in, and similarly you get something for a while, then later you start getting less and less out of it. Or you make sacrifice. The idea of means justifies the end, and after a while, it just means and means. It's hard to remember what the ends were. So Prabhupada was making it clear of what the means and what the goal should be, we should strive for. Another letter in 69, Vrindavan conception is a transcendental village. While any botheration of modern industrial atmosphere. It's like now as people are, you know, see, we may not be so much aware of it, but right now 5 to 10% of people in America are totally convinced about this Y2K issue, and they're rushing into living in these farms, trying to change their lives, taking the monies out of the bank, so many different things. And that's going to become many times more in April when government begins to make their different announcements. So, what it takes place is that some people begin to realize industrialization has actually cheated them. That it wasn't so long ago when people really, really embraced science as almost like God. It wasn't so long ago when people really embraced, you know, industrialization. But then they start finding out, hold a minute, there's some diseases coming up that were not existing before. And they start looking, oh, hold a minute, there's some mental problem that's coming up now that people weren't having before. And then they start looking at now some psychophysiological patterns, you know, attention deficits and so many things people were not having before. And then they start noticing so many accidents, nuclear spills, and toxic waste. It's one of the things that people are really worried about that are living in some areas where there are these nuclear reactors that are also run by so much modern technology. And so these things are very, very serious. And when they're not properly to be controlled, then tremendous pollution and diseases and which will cause death will be quite extensive. in such environments. So, you can see how someone who's too much obsessed in science, they can forget about God, they can forget about Krishna. Because science becomes the all in all. Or someone is too obsessed in technology. Their whole obeisance just goes to the different new technological innovative things. And they can lose it. You can see how with so many things coming out of living entity, why it's so often that people forget about Krishna, because there's so many things that distracts them that give some artificial stimulation, fulfillment, security, etc. Like we mentioned about the tremendous number of devotees in Australia and places like that who are on, you know, welfare. So because it's so easy to get on and you get such sizable money, a lot of devotees get really nice houses, a lot of nice property, they're just from being on welfare. And so when something's so easy like that, then the tendency is, of course, people take advantage of it. Or recently they noticed that there is a big, big plague in Australia. Two things. One, homosexuality, and two, heroin. So somehow heroin is cheaper than marijuana, than cocaine, than other drugs. And so just, you know, tens of thousands of people have become addicted to, you know, to heroin because it's just so accessible. So the tendency is people, you know, use it for recreation, for socialization, and so many other things. So when Kali makes the sin so easy available, then people fall into it. Or when Kali makes the sin so pervasive that it's everywhere, then people begin to think, well, after everyone else is doing it, it can't be so bad, or everyone can't be wrong. Or one begins to think that this is the natural order of things, and they find themselves falling into such patterns. This is when Kali has really become dominant. See, it's one thing to be a sinful person, to know it's sinful, to want to change, to work on yourself, and you gradually change. But it is more devastating when one is sinful and sin has become so predominant that the individual is thinking that the sin is not only okay, but it's the best thing. So then it becomes institutionalized or becomes acculturated, or people begin to accept the sinful thing as the thing that's proper. And this is one of the reasons why Krishna incarnates from time and time again, because sometimes things get so sinful that religion, that irreligion, appears to be religion. And that the things that are supposedly there to elevate the entity become so much infiltrated and sabotaged that people just become totally bewildered about what is a spiritual lifestyle, what are the demands and requests of the Godhead. And they begin to embrace with zeal and eagerness the sinful thing rather than the devotional or pious thing. And you can see that's happening already, that people are becoming so confused about, you know, what is to be done. And so they embrace something sinful and things that are upgrading, uplifting, they have an attitude with it. So Prabhupada says, Vrindavan conception is a transcendental village without any botheration of modern industrial atmosphere. My idea of developing new Vrindavan is to create an atmosphere of spiritual life where people in a bona fide order of social division, namely brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprastha sannyasis, and especially brahmacharis, sannyasis, and vanaprasthas will live there independently, completely dependent on agricultural produce, milk from the cows, etc. The life should be simplified without being hampered by laboring day and night for economic development. I was noticing some of our devotees in Washington and seeing in some cases, and some people, congregational people, how some of them are working like, you know, heavy jobs, two jobs, working. But then somehow at the end of the month, they don't have any money. And so you wonder, what's happening? You realize because of the standard of living that they're working to be the slave of a big house, you know, a big mortgage or something. or a big car or whatever. And so, therefore, if that's the standard, they got to work so hard to try to maintain that standard. And then, at the end, you're suffering because your health is bad, the conscience is bad, and you leave the body and everything goes on somehow or other. So, somehow there has to be clarity within each individual's mind what becomes excessive in their life. It's just like this understanding what is favorable and what isn't favorable. So we have to judge it so much based on if we are finding ourselves not following the principles, then whatever we're doing is unfavorable. Doesn't matter what it is. We are doing something and we have good goals, we have high considerations, high aspirations, we have good intent. But if those things is causing us not to be able to follow the principles, then that is our maya. And if somehow we're doing so many things, and it may be detailed, it may be so much association with karma, so much influence this way, that way, but if we are able to follow the principles, then we can be able to go on and offer that to the lotus feet of the Lord. Or we can evaluate and see, as we're doing certain things, is it increasing our desire to want to become all for Krishna? Or is it causing us to feel more and more comfortable with material energy? If it's causing us to feel more and more comfortable with material energy, then that's our maya that's pulling us away. And we have to simplify it again. We have to begin to look at what is the essence of what Prabhupada is asking for community development, for our own salvation, and the ultimate goal. Prabhupada says, the New Vrindavan idea is that persons who live there will accept the bare necessities of life to maintain the body and soul together. Now, the necessities of life, they differ for persons. Someone's standard, from terms of what is the bare necessity, may be a luxurious and opulent lifestyle, someone else. Like what is considered bare necessity for somebody in Latin America, South America, Central America, and much of Africa and India, such bare necessities would be just practically impossible for someone in the Western world. Just like the people here in America who live in the inner city area, in a ghetto, in slums, or whatever, and the houses that they have would be considered, and 3/4 in the parts of the world would be considered upper middle class. But it's relative to the, you know, to the situation. And sometimes a person who, in the developing part of the world, considers themselves poor, and they have, you know, so much facility, and they have one or two cars, etc. There are many, many places in the world that a person has a car means that they are doing quite good economically. Just the fact that they have a car that they can drive every day is a sign that they are high above average standards. And so simplicity is there, but we look at and think particularly how we arrange our lives so that we are more prone for getting the nourishment of the devotion. And where we're not getting that nourishment, then the life is overly complicated. But life is such that somehow you go from day to day, and we have no time or interest to read or to hear. Then something is not quite right in our priorities and in the things that we're having to deal with and fight through. But if we somehow are doing so much, whatever it may be, but we're not losing our sense of identity of what we're really here for and what we really have to do, then that is renunciation. The whole Vedic principle is to develop Krishna consciousness without creating much botheration for the program of sense gratification. Industrial development is the neighboring places will mar the whole idea. Now you have to consider yourself. See, also with industrialization, there's impersonalism. Nivisesha Sunyavadi. So when we have this impersonalism in our environment, in our consciousness, how can we embrace and love the personal aspect of the Godhead when we've been so much stimulated by impersonalism? And also, how can we be genuinely accountable when we're accepted in a personalistic platform? And without being genuinely accountable, then we're not accepting that Krishna is reciprocating based on our input and our consciousness. So by minimizing that, we minimize Krishna's presence and his supreme dominion over all that be. We minimize how everything is resting upon him. Matapavatanandyach kintana sidananjaya mayisavamidampoptam sutra managaniva. We minimize that by too much emphasis in modernity, industrialization, too much distraction for economics, where we lose the essence. It's another letter from November 8, 1970. Prabhupada says, I am very pleased that you are opening a nice center in an important city in Pittsburgh. This is the higher griva also. Please develop the Pittsburgh and New Vrindavan conjointly. This is what we're mentioning, how in some places where the farms are beginning to take off again, there has been some new input with a marriage or relationship between a city project and a rural project, with the emphasis that the rural project is supreme or primary. And then the city project, rather than draining from it or minimizing it, adds to the experience, facility, manpower, finances, etc. So Prabhupada was congratulating them based on this, Pittsburgh and New Vrindavan for functioning in such a way. If Pittsburgh Center can help contribute financially to our New Vrindavan, that will help relieve many financial problems. I am often thinking of New Vrindavan, and I'm so much glad that you have taken the initiative to establish the program. Before I came to your country, I was thinking to establish an ideal Vedic community. So please work very hard to make New Vrindavan a great place. So, it's many talking about New Vrindavan because that was the first community in those days that was being established. The Kurusetra, July 23rd, 1973. This is a very important letter. Prabhupada says, I can understand your concern about the deterioration of the civilization. Yes, the city will be more dangerous place as Kali Yuga advances. It will be very, very deteriorating. This is the other quote we're reading, how Prabhupada was saying how there will soon be no cities. The modern civilization is so corrupt and is so sinful, the activities are more and more committed. People will be forced to face more troubles by nature's orders. It's like now there are so many, I was reading to the devotees the other day, some of the executive orders that the President Clinton has put into effect. He's put more executive orders into effect than any president in the history of America. And very few people know about that. And through some of the executive orders, it explains tremendous ways how the president can literally become an autocrat, and how so many things can be seized, put fully under the control of the Federal Emergency Administration Association, especially for catastrophes, disasters, and whatnot. And so many things are being activated that way because of the knowledge that they have. We were discussing Saturday with one or two of the devotees who are associating with some members, some organizations that are visiting, interacting with the White House and some think tanks. And so they have professed at this time, it may change, but that in April there are going to be statements coming out to the American public. This has just recently, FEMA itself made statement. FEMA is the organization that oversees when there are disasters, hurricanes, floods, economic collapse, whatever. Well, economic collapse, not to the same extent, but oversees it. And so they were just coming out, the director just came out recently saying how individuals should take on more preparedness themselves, because there realizing that National Guard and the Army and so many things, they can do so much. But when you have so many things happening all at the same time, in so many ways, it becomes very, very difficult to be able to coordinate such things properly. So the director himself was just announcing about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that individual families and people should get more involved in sort of looking for themselves about their, about their well-being, etc. So in these executive orders, which started way back in 1937, it has clarity of how the president can seize all transportation, communication, medicine, food supplies, etc., etc., and as he declares certain types of emergencies and control those things as such. Because the biggest danger is that when you have leaders who really are not God conscious, really do not have the real care of the people as their primary priority, then of course it is extremely dangerous. And these things can just be accessed from government records, not a matter of speculation or alternative thinking or whatever. So Prabhupada says, yes, the cities will be more dangerous. Place as Kali Yuga advances, it will be very deteriorating. The modern civilization is so corrupt and its sinful activities are more and more committed, the people will be forced to face more troubles. And I was talking to Jamuna Dinatani last week. They've moved to Suranagati, and so they've moved into an environment where devotees are trying to live together, and by circumstance, they are much more into a simple lifestyle because the community is off the grid. And so they were saying how, reiterating how the Canadian government and the British government are speaking about these things so much more than the American government is. As we were discussing with some of the devotees who work in the federal government and in security, that doing last month in the police forces in Washington, the high-level superintendents and advisors made it very clear to the police officers that in the last week of December of this year, not one single policeman is allowed to take leave, to have absence, to be on vacation, let them know far ahead of time. And then I came to one of our devotees who's a policeman. He was inquiring, and why a whole year ahead of time they're telling them they can't take off in these times. And he made it very clear. He said that Pepco is the electric company in Washington, that they have made it clear that they are not going to be compliant and that there won't be lights and they're not sure electricity for, they're not sure how long. And so they want all the policemen available as such. So this is just normal police forces. They're being notified in some of these ways. We shall be, Prabhupada says, our business, however, is simply to take shelter of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and pray to the holy names to give us protection. We shall be unaffected. It's a very powerful statement Prabhupada says here. We shall be unaffected by all that that will happen. Krishna will provide us with working facilities. Be assured of this, that the devotees will be protected by the holy names. Others will have to suffer in the days that are coming. So the greater there's devotion, then there is also the Krishna factor that's there. Prabhupada makes it very clear that people will be affected by Kali Yuga, that things will deteriorate more and more in the cities, and that the suffering will be there and will be intense. I want to go to the short letters. This is a letter to Rupanuga, September the 4th, 1974. Regarding the Buffalo Project, New Vrindavan is the example. You should develop in a similar way. Have milk, vegetables, simple living, and chant Hare Krishna. So how proud Prabhupada was when there was some serious undertakings for, simplicity. Or when there was some serious, internal developments where foodstuff was being grown, cows were being nicely taken care of, and devotees were happy in such situations to a certain extent, trying to deal with such things. And of course, the more emphasis becomes on the externals, or economy from outside, or collecting only where the devotional creeper is not sufficiently watered, then of course it brings inauspiciousness, Because as we collect money, money is not neutral. As we collect money, and if we are collecting it, and the money is coming with all kind of unhealthy karma due to how we collect it, then it means we like bring, as an underlining basis to the project, we bring dynamite that explodes in certain times. Like there's certain projects that have big, big legal problem, or there's big Maya tax project. And many times you'll see it's because of the money that's come in, what it's associated with, the conscience of those who are bringing that in, then all that comes in and has a karmic effect in the environment. The whole world is engaged in unnecessary hard labor with their factories. It is brain-killing civilization. Let them come to free life, spend time chanting Hare Krishna, reading books and making their lives successful. Now, while Prabhupada is talking like this, we also see that there were times when he encouraged devotees to get jobs. Like when Sati Maharaj first wanted to join, Prabhupada encouraged him to go on and to do his work. There are cases when there was like that, or cases when somebody wanted to renounce and Prabhupada encouraged them that they should go on in this way. Or like in the case of Raghunath Das, when at first he wanted to leave. Lord Chaitanya encouraged him to stay with his family and do such. So renunciation, always we should remind ourselves, is not based on the externals, but it's based on consciousness. But the external environment and what we do can influence our consciousness, especially to the degree that we are neophytes, that it influences and enters into our consciousness like anything. I am very glad to hear about your new farm ashram. This is a letter to Bohudak, December 15, 1974. I am very glad to hear about your new farm ashram existing there. We want to develop many such farms all over the world. You are enthusiastic and intelligent, and it appears that you are managing it nicely. Why not call it New Gokula instead of New Mayapur? I think that is better. It is all right that you have purchased machinery and are using it on the farm, but if you can do without as much as possible, that is better. So you see how practical Prabhupada was. So he's saying, okay, it's all right if you purchase machinery, all right, if that is what you have to do, okay, that's necessary, do. But if you can do without, then that is better, or try. It sounds as if the living in conditions, there may be little extreme, but if the devotees can learn to tolerate, as you say, they are determined and can stay and work there, that is very good. And I give all encouragement to them. So, Prabhupada's not an extremist. This letter to Sathya Maharaj, the 9th of November, 1975. So, Prabhupada says this to Sathya Maharaj, he says, so in the Western countries, they are selling their churches and farms, which we require. That is also Krishna's plan. In the USA, there is enough land, and if we can organize, we can become very big. A big party, Hare Krishna party. We can occupy America and make them all become Krishna conscious. Regarding St. Louis farm, yes, we can work and build some small cottages with thatched roofs, provided we get men. It is very encouraging. You should get this farm. 10 at least are sufficient to run a farm. So only 10 people to run a farm, huh? This is a letter to Balavanta, July 8, 1976. The name for the Tennessee community is Murray Savick. I was just telling the devotees here how fortunate they are, because there's very few farms in the world right now that have as many devotees as we have here. You should know that. I don't know if there's one farm right now in the world that has as many devotees as we have here. Maybe in Eastern Europe. Murray Savick Farm, I was just there. When I was doing TV in Atlanta and Tennessee, there was 6 devotees then. Now there's 4 devotees running the whole farm, doing the deity service, installed deities, doing the cooking of the offerings, taking care of the cows, cleaning the facilities, taking out the garbage, doing whatever they have to do. About 4, there's 4 devotees. And this big farm we're talking about Australia, that became a big tourist attraction. There was only, you know, maybe 15, 16 devotees in the whole farm. The other farm in Sydney that I went to last year, There was one devotee on the farm, and maybe seven or eight families that were in the peripheral area. And so the one devotee would be was the caretaker, and different families would come in to do the offerings. They have also installed deities. They had a schedule. It's rotating those families doing everything. That one devotee was taking care of the cows and maintaining the security of the particular farm. I can mention several, but there's literally a handful of people. But that may be changing there's literally a kind of a movement now for devotees trying to reconsider these things. The devotees in Alachua is holding regular meetings. Devotees in Mayapur, last week, 66 devotees, the leaders of different divisions, of different departments in Mayapur, have all come together, and they have just focused now that they have to grow their own food, they have to create a greater sense of security, they have to be able to have a better water supply, so many things. And hopefully before the week is out, we'll have next 4 or 5 days, seven of us have put together a plan for all the North American temples and leaders, and then to be presented to the international board of just what temples should be considering based on this Y2K problem being 1 week to 2 weeks, being 6 months, being a year to 3 years, and perhaps being extensive. And so that will be going around to the temples very soon with video and audio and some writing materials and lots of references from the books and quotes from leading politicians, presidents of countries, bankers, investors, from all over the world, computer analysis experts in so many ways. So that will be available very soon. At least the leaders are working on this as we're talking right at this time. The name for the Tennessee community is Murray Savick. The farms we should have, or probably speaking now, on the farms we should have mainly grihasthas. Farms are especially meant for grihasthas. Brahmanas and sannyasis are meant for begging food grains from the grihasthas. They depend on the grihasthas, and the grihasthas treat them as their children. As a child is not a burden for the parents, so brahmins and sannyasis are not a burden for the grihasthas. They simply take food grains to survive. They give transcendental knowledge for the benefit of the society. They have no worries for producing and securing food. That is the business of grihasthas. But the sannyasi and brahmacharis devote their time to spreading, preaching knowledge. That is the system. Now you can see why it's for grihasthas, because farm work is really very hard work. And die. Sisi Varha Dhammadar Varha Kalachandi Jagannath Baladev Subhadraki. So as sometimes you find when devotees first come to live on a farm, and of course they're single, it's sometimes a little harder. It's natural. If you're working very hard and you're in such an environment, sometimes one begins to feel lonely because of so much all the stimulation that was there in the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance from the cities. Also, whatever's in your mind kind of comes out sometimes a little more when there's less things to hide behind. And as most people are, definitely it's healthy and it's needful that they have a relationship where they can work as team or as partners in trying to protect each other and trying to engage in service. And for most people, as they work hard, then their senses can desire some fulfillment in different ways also. But in general, farm means community. The community means families. And families means a chance to offer so much to Krishna based on the grihastha ashram. Again, when there is proper simplicity, then grihastha ashram can function much more successfully in a rural environment. You say, well, what do we see? The statistics that our grihasthas in urban environments are having more difficulty than the rural environments. Well, if we bring the same consciousness to the environment, then we're going to have the same problems. But you can see that some of the problems that may enhance the difficulties in household ashram can also be associated with being so much subjected to the influence of material culture. There's so many people who've divorced, the relationships are bad, and a major part of it has to do with the influence of material culture that sabotage, you know, the relationship. And it's causing what people, the person you're closest with, the one you manifest or project your anxieties and problems on. So it's a little late, so I'll end with this last one. In New Vrindavan, our program is that the inhabitants should produce, and then we'll see if you have a few questions, and we'll stop. It's a little late. In New Vrindavan, our program is that the inhabitants should produce their own food. Somehow or other, they should be self-independent. Baba's word again. Otherwise, what is the use of occupying such great tract of land? If we can think of starting a small institute, I think we shall get help from the government and many foundations. If they understand that we are actually training people for building up character and health, along with imparting education. So yesterday I was mentioning this to some of the devotees, how we have a really opportune time now. We can get our act together for preaching and capitalizing off situations. Some years back in our project in Cleveland, for about 6-7 years straight, we were getting over $30,000 given to us from the government to facilitate our Food for Life program. So at some point, the government was looking at what they were doing in the Meals for Wheels program or something, and they looked at what we were doing, and they saw that we could do 3-4 times as many people give food to at half the price. And so what they did then the city council just gave us the funds to be able to use it to do what we were doing anyway, but now we're able to do it with funds and so much supplies that came from the government. So as things begin to accelerate, and there's all kind of emergencies and so much stuff happening, and some places some results of that has already taken place, if devotees in different parts of the world have their act together, then Red Cross, then civic organizations and armies and relief organizations and other things can facilitate the devotee community to be able to do the services to be able to help others. When the war was going on in Liberia, the first phases of it, the rebels who took over the government, they then gave us tons and tons of food stuff while people were just starving by the masses. And they knew our history as distributing food, prasadam. So they gave us tons and tons of food stuff when people were starving and things were being rationed so that we could just serve out to a lot of people. But many people, the only meals they get were the meals, you know, that devotees were making available. Some people, their lives were maintained by the fact that they were able to get, to have prasadam. So these things are not impossible if we especially have the devotion and use what we do have properly. Then Krishna's always promised he supplies what we're lacking and maintains what we have. There are cases like that in Eastern Europe also, where the government facilitated the devotees to be able to help. And now at least about 4 projects are getting facilitated, farm projects are getting facilitated just due to the ecological problem. The farm in Brazil, they're getting big money from the government, because the government is concerned, with conservation. And so devotees then are being able to take care of their forests in such a way that the government is facilitating to help in that way. There's about 3 or 4 other projects that are getting some facilitation like that also, just due to the fact that we're trying to live our lifestyle, and people hear about it and influenced by it, and then Krishna arranges to get them to facilitate us in some various ways. Same thing is happening right now in Australia. They're looking at ways now that the farm is getting rejuvenated. They're embarking upon getting some grants from the government to help. And then our devotee, a local, was helping, kind of help with the Mayapur project, as we are now approaching the UN, United Nations, and some NGOs, and trying to present a package how Mayapur will be presented as a educational, cultural, economically sustainable project, and because they are so much concerned now that so much resources are being depleted, and so much concern how humankind is so unfriendly, you know, to the ecology, in some places where people step forward with some plan, they can capitalize and be able to be used in such ways. So we'll take a few questions and then we'll stop. Mantra, yeah? You just holding the mic. Anybody have a question?
Mm-hmm. Maharaj, I've talked to some devotees who feel, oh, we don't have to do anything. Things will happen by itself. Mm-hmm. Between simplicity and simple-mindedness. Can you talk a little on the difference between the two?
Yeah, it's a huge difference. It's like Prabhupada emphasizes to us in the Acharyas about, you know, Daso Smi, about being humble and being the servant of the servant, or Param Dukha Dukhi. But there's never emphasis about being foolish or emphasis in being naive. Being humble and devotional and tolerant doesn't mean to be foolish or naive, or does it mean to be in denial? You see, it's like some people are kind of in denial about the Y2K thing, but it doesn't matter, because there's no way that it can be a minimized as a reality. Because even if it is fixed, even if it is true, the fact that trillions of dollars worldwide are being spent, and the fact that tens of millions of people have accepted it, is already in itself a sociological and economic factor. Like many companies now are putting billions of dollars or millions of dollars into now trying to, you know, become compliant. So that means so much of what would be profit or so much of what would go into the economy has went into such. So there's so many fallout effects that will come just from worldwide, the economic input and the effects, the fallout that will come from that. And anybody know economics? A lot of economics is based not only on what is, but what people think. Just right now, I mean, just like Jagannath Dasi, she works, you know, in the government and in the Department of Treasury, and where they, you know, they print money. And so they're printing billions and billions of dollars in America and some of the European countries, because they're just realizing that people are becoming aware, study the thing, they're going to have to make certain announcements, and people are going to lose faith in a lot of these things, you know, and banks and stock markets, etc. So they're putting billions of dollars. Jagannath Dasi was just telling me today how they're working 24 hours a day in printing. The David Amrita's family was telling me he works in New Zealand, and he has contact with some those in the Federal Reserve Board in New Zealand. And they told him over 5-6 months ago about and how the Federal Reserve managers all around the world have been meeting together, and this is one of the decisions, and then a short time it happened. They start printing money like anything, just trying to get it out into the atmosphere. So being simple, a devotee is a strategician, is because, one, we see the example of Haridasa Thakur, who's a Namacharya. He never was complacent. He was always thinking in the mood that if I don't finish my rounds, I'll fall into Maya. So a devotee never trusts Maya or is comfortable in a materialistic environment. You know, we don't have to be overly paranoid, but an actual devotee is never putting confidence and shelter in materialism, in people who, you know, cannot control their senses, and in many cases are actively campaigning against Krishna. We never trust, you know, trust such people and their policies and whatnot. And that's why Prabhupada said the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is a society designed to help people to be able to, not forget the exact wording, but the essence of to not have to take shelter of material culture. Prabhupada is emphatic like that. The International Society of Krishna Consciousness is a society designed so people will not have to take shelter of material culture. Yes?
So, Prabhupada, we've read that the emotional response for most people to the Y2K problem is one of denial. That's the first step. And so given that you read the letter that Srila Prabhupada said that if one is chanting Hare Krishna, that they will be protected, that nothing will happen to that person, what exactly does this mean for, let's say, a devotee that may be in denial about these crisis situation and thinking or having read that, heard that letter that Srila Prabhupada said they will be protected or we will be protected?
Like Krishna says, was Name Bhakya Pranashati, my devotee should never perish. But Bhakti Vinod Dukor, he was attacked by the yogi. His family was attacked. His body was threatened. Now, he went through that, but Krishna ultimately protected him. Or that Krishna ultimately intervened. But it didn't mean that he didn't get some influence or wasn't affected in various ways. It's like, I think during the VIHE program, somebody was asking about when we had the question and answer session, and someone asked Swamapada Maharaj, and two or three questions came after that, why is it that sometimes devotees of Krishna, Vaishnavas, often suffer so much, and sometimes even the way they leave the bodies sometimes is rather intense. And so the question is, if Krishna is there, then why Krishna doesn't protect one from such things? Protection is not just based on physical body. There may be some interference there. Sometimes something happens to us. If we weren't devotees, then it would be much worse. The karmic factor is there. Some token thing is given. But many times, devotees do struggle and suffer more maturely than others because they're also doing what? Sometimes they're burning up so much karma from the past. And because they're serious, Krishna lets many calamities and things come upon them so that they burn that up and they put it behind them. And sometimes Krishna arranges that he takes away, a kinchana, he takes away so that that devotee can be more in a destitute consciousness so that now the devotee can focus more in intensity on, on the spiritual connection. So you have these kind of things that are there. And for many people, they found that when they became a devotee, they had more problems in their life than they ever had before. And sometimes because as a materialist, we have so many ways, so many other outlets, so many other things that we would do to engage in our senses, engage our senses. And also because we had so many ways we were hiding behind so much cosmetic stuff that the cleansing process wasn't going on. So that does happen, even to the point of sickness. Some people who are very healthy, once they became a devotee, little after they got their beads, they've been sick ever since. They made one trip to Vrindavan, and ever since then they have some chronic illness. So it's some rapid purification. But you can see at the same time, it can cause a person to think, and some people do think. They think, hold a minute, I had enough of this, I'm not going to chant this mantra anymore. This brings one complexity after another. So what we're really praying is not so much for material shelter and protection, but we're praying for spiritual acceleration. And what helps that materially, then those things, we're eager to reflect on. So the devotee should never be interested just in material survival or material opulences or material security or material prestige. But we may try to capture such things as to use it for preaching. But we have to be careful not to lose our focus. Like there's some devotees who've been trying. I know one or two devotees who've been trying for 26 years trying to be a famous musician. And that's sometimes the intoxication of music is even more intoxicated than sex life or drugs. So it gets so intoxicated and it's just about to happen. Just about ready to make that famous record. And they're going on. They're about 50 years old now. They're still thinking they're 22 years old, going to become a famous musician. But the idea is that they're going to be famous and they're going to spread Krishna consciousness like anything. And in the process, they've given so much of their Krishna consciousness away, in the process. But now, if someone does become famous and they use it, then how powerful it is. I mean, how many people, heard the mantra and even became devotees because they were, they were followers or connected, with George Harrison. Well, how many people now are chanting Hare Krishna because, they heard, Boy George, chanting Hare Krishna or something. So, there are some connections that can enhance people's mind to participate in some way. Ajnana, Sukriti, that they engage without knowing, but somehow in the process of devotion, and they get some credits. And many people who are devotees now, it's because of some credits that they acquired unknowingly in a previous time, and now those credits have built up to a point where they're able to engage in devotional service now. Any other questions? Yes.
In these topics and losing
the goal? Yes. That was kind of the whole lecture. The whole lecture I gave is that whatever we're doing, we have to constantly simplify. Remember what the essence is. Just like Prabhupada, when he built Vrindavan Temple and he built Bombay, and people attacked him like anything sometimes. Why is he building this, was it 4 or 5-star hotel, the theater and restaurant, you know, all these facilities? And, you know, in the Juhu area, which is real prime real estate. But then, for festivals, sometimes we have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who come. And we have so many people who are chanting Hare Krishna. And so many people who now are helping projects all around the world just because they're mainly attracted to the opulence of what Prabhupada set up. And then from that, the message is there, so many other things happen. So, you know, those things are there because we see that that was Lord Chaitanya's mood. And how he sometimes would trick people to chant Hare Krishna. The danger, of course, is when the devotees start taking any of this kind of stuff as primary. Then it becomes like a religion or a philosophy, and they just get distracted, you know. But if we see sickness, if we see opulence or deprivations or certain periods of staticness or whatever, we see that simply as an opportunity to be less dependent on material energy and to be more fearful of material energy and to engage in our devotional processes and activities with more sincerity, then it's wonderful. But to the degree that that doesn't become the primary focus, it's just another distraction, you know, of Kali. And Kali has so many, many games to distract people. There's, you know, a lot of opportunities for distraction. This is why when Krishna says, man madamava, when he's talking about always engage your mind in thinking of me, that this is what's most important. We have to look and see what is the mind really taking as a priority. And if it's taking, you know, eating, sleeping, mating, defending in any way as a priority, a number one priority, then that's a problem. But if we take those things that we're trying to do that so we can more effectively do our devotion. So we're trying to, you know, have money so we don't have to worry about it. We're trying to have shelter, facility, food, so that we can maintain healthy body, healthy family, healthy children, because that becomes an immediate field of activity for us as we're trying to serve Krishna in that way. Otherwise, it's renunciation in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion. But we do see that things can make a difference sometimes in our lives. We have to see to what degree are we becoming slaves of things while we're using things. Whether it's matter, material things, or whether it's theories and philosophies and conspiracies or whatever, oh, another drug, another form of maya. But if we are keeping the simplicity and the goal in mind, whether we are brahmachari, grihastha, sannyasi, whether working outside, inside, whether we have 5 children, 10 children, or 1 child, that if we realize, okay, Krishna has given me this field of activity, now how can I somehow offer it back to him? How can I glorify him in such a way by taking care of this, using this in a way that Krishna would be satisfied? Any last question? Yes, Kim Nagar?
I was going to make a comment.
Mm-hmm. Please.
Whenever I hear about this Y2K problem, I spent a long time, what kind of enters in my mind, I spent a long time hiking the high Himalayas, especially the places where Vishnu is worshipped in the high Himalayas. And, you know, the Y2A, we think that it's a problem, but there's like a lot of places on the planet where the Y2K problem is going to happen, but it's not going to, you know, there's no internet up there, there's no there's no electricity, there's no cable, there's no, and when you get up there, you know, there's no roads. And people still live you know, a life that maybe we're trying to get to. You know, they're actually still, they still live that type of life. So somehow or other, you know, if these disasters do happen, my idea, even if the whole world becomes a disaster, you know what I'm saying, what we consider a disaster here, you know, the civilization will still go on, you know what I'm saying? And one thing that I always noticed when I was up there, and I mean, a very vivid realization is that there's these five famous deities, the five Badris they're called. As you go up the Himalayas, you successively go from, there's five Badri temples, and the final temple is the one up in Badrinath, but there's four other Vishnu temples you visit before you get to Badrinath. And the amazing thing I always noticed is that when these are temples that are like 600-700 years old, and they're more like shrines than temples, but you know, they're not like what we consider an ISKCON temple, but the deity is there and the local people still worship them. You know, it's not exactly the type of deity worship we do in ISKCON, but the deities are still there. But a lot of times you get to the temple and you come over the mountain, and as you look down into the valley, like the temple would be like right in the valley, like, you know, in the middle of the valley. But I always noticed that these temples were not surrounded by cities. They weren't like, but from the temple would be in the middle, and outside the temple there would be a whirl of agricultural fields being tended by men and women, you know, in the old-fashioned way with yaks and you know, planting rice and doing it by hand. And in the middle of the field would be this huge, powerful deity of Lord Vishnu. You know what I'm saying? And my realization was is that Krishna likes that. That he actually likes the world to be agricultural. And the problem is that many of these things that are going to happen, at least from, like I said, this is my comment, is going to be for the betterment of the world. Yeah. We're all thinking, oh, wow, man, you know, if the planes drop out of the skies, and, you know, and I'm just thinking, I can't wait for the planes to drop out of the skies. And, man, if we can't, if the cities fall apart and the goods aren't going to be delivered by the trucks and whatever, you know, and everybody's thinking, what a disaster. But it's not going to be a disaster. It's going to be great. You know?
It's a very, perceptive point, is that majority of the world, actually the majority of the world, doesn't depend on some of these things. We see that so many people on the planet, billions of people, are still living, you know, an agricultural life. And much of what most people see as, you know, as problematic is just a resimplification. And it's just kind of exposing how cosmetic that, you know, many people who are now captured and enslaved by modernity, how cosmetic, you know, that their lives are. So you can see it in many ways that Mother Bhumi is constantly finding ways to cleanse herself and to help people constantly and unconsciously to be able to take more shelter of the natural and of the spiritual. I mean, there are millions and hundreds of millions of people who are living, who grow their own food, who have no normal job where they're working outside of their environment, and have no electricity, have no water, you know, treatment plants and things, but they're living, you know, very healthily. And in some cases, better, because just for instance, just terrorism alone, you poison a, you know, water treatment place, and many people get, you know, get affected, or some computers aren't working, and so many people get affected because so much decentralization. In some way, it's like so many people around here, living in Port Royal, they had pumps. They were using pumps, you know, not so long ago, hand pumps. And, they don't use it now in most cases, but so many things are there. So many people their houses are built. You know, they have wood stoves. They're still there, and of course the Amish. You know, there's so many different things that they have. So it's not in any way, if any intelligent person looks at it, like the world coming to an end or doomsday, but to the degree that people may be enslaved by certain patterns of modernity, then there'll be all types of problems that manifest in different ways, which, you know, which time will show more. We say more because it's already happening. This last month, Chicago Airport, they tested their system and it didn't work. You know, some of the fiscal year change effects starts in April, so you're going to see some effects there to see how real some of these things in fact are. And then there are some enterprises that have went ahead and they see that, you know, the effects are there. So these things are manifesting or in the process already. But if we see each situation, how to think more Krishna, how to glorify Krishna more, and I'll be speaking to the international board in Mayapur, the leaders, and even the letter out there I sent to the leaders a couple of days ago, in terms of, as leaders, we have to lead from the front, not from the back, and not from the side. And if we're leading, we have to be sensitive to the field of activities. And the field of activities means we have to protect the devotees of Maya and keep the goal in mind. And so in that strategy, we have to constantly see how to capitalize for the moment to be able to preach and to move ahead in our spiritual growth based on whatever stuff is going on. The last question. I think the kids that need to take prasadam, huh? And the adults also. Okay. Iskan found the child, his divine grace. Esi bhakti viranta swami jirva vadki. Sisi varha dhammadarji ki. Hare Krishna.